This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Windier today. Oh, yeah, it's not a worm bite.
It's a giant.
It's not a worm bite, turns out.
It's a giant.
It's a giant!
Baby! It's a giant!
What's going on, everybody? We got a great podcast with you today with some young guys, Uncle Larry Outdoors. They are on. It is Eric, Johnny, and Kai. Here we go.
No, they need to go out and have fun. They need to go hop a fence when they're 12 years old and catch a 6-pounder and giggle running away from a tractor. Like, that's gonna, those memories are gonna drive you to be the person in 15 years who, yes, has that $5,000 Goliath setup and move down to the Keys.
My name's Kai.
Johnny.
And Eric.
We're Uncle Larry Outdoors. This is the Tom Rowland Podcast.
What's going on, Uncle Larry Outdoors? What's going on, fellas?
Thanks for having us, Tom. Appreciate it, man.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What are you guys up to today? Is the wind blowing for you?
Yeah, it's a little chilly out there today. You know, how cold was it this morning? Like 40?
45.
Yeah.
45. So for 45, what does that do for your fishing? Are you looking forward to anything when it gets cold, or does it shut you down?
You just kind of have to adjust. I think we kind of like the winter. So pretty much our favorite time of year to fish, just with the way that we fish, is we do a lot of kayaking and backwater stuff. Mm-hmm. So we kind of excel when those temps get a little cooler and those fish push back up into, you know, some of those rivers and backwaters. It's a little easier to manage than, you know, all of Tampa Bay.
For sure. So Uncle Larry. So Uncle Larry isn't just one person. It's a whole bunch of people.
Yeah, we came up with the name. It was kind of like more of a metaphorical idea, I guess, because I had a Uncle Larry. So he was a real person. And I've actually only fished with him one time. And it was back when I was first really getting into fishing. And I was living up in New Jersey and Long Island. And I was a baseball player back then. So I was always really busy in the spring, summer, and prime times. But for one summer, I had like a little 2-week break. And it was the first summer that I had access to a little boat in Long Island, an 80s Pursuit, like a 21-foot Pursuit. And I was going out for fluke every day. And it was my first experience ever getting on a consistent bite and like a pattern and going through the whole kind of seasonal process of targeting these fish. And so I had this Uncle Larry, and he was a big fisherman, and he had really bad arthritis at this point in his life. So his hands looked like boxing gloves. But I just knew, you know, he loved fishing, and, you know, my mom had asked me if I wanted to go out with him one day. So I was like, yes, but I had been planning this, you know, big send in this old boat, like, we're going to go offshore, it's going to be badass. And when it kind of came down to the day to fish, it was more like, hey, Uncle Larry's probably not going to handle this. Like, just take him snapper fishing off the dock. And like, you know, 12, 13 year old me was being a little arrogant. Like, I don't want to do that. I want to go send it. I want to go out in the ocean. I want to get out in the breakers and stuff. And so I was kind of pissy about it. But we go out on the dock and we're just throwing like little dead shiners. And we got on a little bite, call it like 15, 20 snapper blues. And I just remember how happy this dude was, like cranking like that, you know, just laughing his ass off. I hadn't seen him that happy ever. And I realized he hadn't even caught a fish in like 15 years. But long story short, that really changed my perspective on like why we do this and how much fun I have. And, you know, it not being necessarily about the size or where you are, just kind of the overall experience. And so when he passed away, I went over to his house and his wife had let me take all the fishing stuff, but hadn't been touched in 20 years. So there's really like not much for me to take that was useful at the time, but there was one ultralight rod, and it was a two-piece ultralight rod. It had spinning guides, but a fly fishing reel seat. Uh-huh. And we still haven't even figured out what rod this was exactly. But I got it refurbished and redone and pretty much exclusively used this Noodle ultralight for like from like 2017, 2018 up until last summer when it met its demise eventually. But that was the concept of like Uncle Larry Outdoors was everyone has an Uncle Larry who either introduces you to the sport or reminds you why it's so important or so much fun and the connections that you make out there. And then we kind of took that metaphor and put it into practice by like almost exclusively using that rod. And that rod since, again, met its demise in Sweden, actually, after doing some pike fishing. But we still take that concept seriously and introduce as many people as we can to fishing. And then we're also minimalists with gear. Like we come from New Jersey and not that many people where we growing up were doing this. And we had one rod that worked at any given times out on like our bikes or whatever, you know, doing the whole trespassing scene and fence hopping, bike rides. And we got our licenses and it was kind of game over, but we still only had like very limited gear options. So that idea of kind of like one rod, just get out there, do it for the right reasons. That's kind of been our bread and butter.
Man, that's a cool story. Uncle Larry would be super happy to know that you put that rod to such good use. How many species do you think you caught on that thing?
Oh, man. I mean, some highlights are obviously up north. You got big, largemouth, smallmouth, pretty much every trout species. So brown rainbows, brookies. I took it out to Sweden with me and caught some of their oring, which are kind of their brown trout. Caught pike, pickerel, perch. And then down in Florida, when we moved down here, I caught tarpon on it. Caught jacks, sea trout, reds. Pretty much anything we've encountered on like a day-to-day basis, at least up to that point in our life, we caught something on it.
What'd you do with the reel seat? Did you leave it a fly reel seat or did you?
Yeah, I left the original reel seat. So it has the original reel seat. And for a while it had original everything, but it was hand tied like old rusted metallic guides. And eventually I was like, actually, if I had like braided mainline, it started snapping as I was reeling in. Yeah. So I eventually got, you know, new ceramic guides put on there. And then polished out the two-piece. I didn't even know it was a two-piece at first because it was so old that I couldn't even pull the rod apart. So once I got that polished out, I started traveling with it a lot more. It never broke on a fish. I caught tarpon on it, pike, everything. And what broke it was on my birthday in Sweden last year, I went pike fishing. I actually caught some decent, you know, 24, 25-inch pike on this ultralight. Wow. And then the car window.
Oh, no, it met its demise in a car window.
Yeah,
you just ruined the whole story, man. All these great fish and everything else, and it dies in a car window. It's better than a ceiling fan.
We got jacks and little grouper and everything, and it was a car window.
Oh, man, it's better than a ceiling fan, though. That would even be less honorable for a rod like that. So were you putting a spinning rod on the fly reel reel seat like that? And did you try to ever fly fish with it?
The eventual pairing was a 1K Stradic, 10 pounds braid, and then whatever leader we're using for.
When I grew up in Tennessee, people used to use fly rods. It was like the opposite. They would use a fly rod, but then they would put a spinning reel on it, and they would just, it was almost like kind of like European nymphing, but they would do it with bait. They would take a live, you know, minnow and then put it on a fly rod with a spinning rod on, with a spinning reel on it, and then they would just kind of high stick it down through these, you know, little creeks. Mm-hmm. And but it was almost the opposite. I'm trying to think of why somebody would make a rod like that, a spinning rod with a fly reel.
It almost seems to be like a fad or like a gimmick, because we haven't found any info on what reel it is. So I could almost see it being like one of those like 60s, 70s Bass Pro 500 gauge. Like,
unless it was like a mooching reel. Do you know what that is? They use them in Alaska. And dude, you can throw this thing incredible. Well, I don't know if they call it a mooching reel there, but a mooching reel is like it's a fly reel type reel that goes on a long rod, but you spool it with mono, and or that's what we were doing in Alaska. And but they called it a center pin. So there's a mooching reel and then there's a center pin. And the center pin would be kind of on a fly rod, but then you would have it the center pin reel, which looks and acts like a fly reel with a center pin, and they could throw this thing with like a bobber, and underneath it is an egg pattern. And because if you're trying to fly fish, you get all the drag in the line and everything, and you got to mend. But up in Alaska, they can throw this thing like all the way across the river, and then with the mono or the braid, you're getting no pull, and you can get these incredible floats and catch. It's deadly. Like, the guys that know how to do that are deadly. So that it could have been something like that, like early center pin style.
It was only 5.5 feet. Like, how long were those rods?
Long, you know? Long in Alaska. But
I feel like for the drifting, you'd want like a longer.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And so one thing that we do here on the podcast, we have the hot seat. So we're going to go through these questions that I prepared for you guys today. all right. Fresh or salt?
Salt.
Drive or fly? Johnny.
Drive.
Chocolate or vanilla, Eric?
Vanilla.
Text or call, Kai?
Text.
Favorite social media platform, Johnny?
YouTube.
Do you answer every comment or never look at them, Eric?
Every comment.
Answer it?
Yes.
1 million now or 10 million later, Kai?
10 million later.
Good for you. One thing you've learned in the last year that's made you money, Johnny?
I would say deliver on what you say you're going to do.
Good one. A movie that makes you laugh?
I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry.
Okay. Kai, would you have a reptile as a pet?
Would and have, yes.
Would and have. Johnny, a non-fishing destination that you'd like to visit?
Every destination's a fishing destination.
Okay. Then Eric gets to tell us what the top fishing destination on your bucket list is.
Bhutan.
Bhutan. What do you want to catch there?
The golden masseer.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I happen to know a little bit about that. I've never been. That's on my list, too. Let's see. One species you would like to catch, Kai?
Species I would like to catch? Gunch catfish.
That's a good one, too. Where would you do that?
India. I forget exactly where in India. I think near the Himalayas somewhere. Mm-hmm. I forget the name of the exact.
I think you might be able to get a masseer while you're there somewhere.
Yeah. I think that masseer is in the same body of water, too.
Yeah.
According to Jeremy Wade.
Yeah, according to Jeremy Wade. Okay. One thing you have changed your mind on in the last 2 years, Johnny?
One thing I've changed my mind on in the last... Okay. When you're right about something, you can keep it to yourself. You don't need to convince other people.
Okay, we'll go into that a little bit later. One piece of advice that you live by, Eric?
Do what you say you're going to do.
A couple of things that you guys were talking about is, you know, things that you've learned. Do what you say you're going to do. Deliver on what you say you're going to deliver. So where, I mean, those are two kind of themes that came through in this. Where does that come from? What are you learning? I'm assuming that Uncle Larry, you're selling to sponsors, or you're doing this as a business, right?
Yeah. So, and that's kind of where it comes from, with like simplifying the mindset and executing on what we say we want to accomplish. Because I think this started off as like this kind of ethereal concept. I was working in Manhattan in financial consulting and tech sales at the time, and really, this was just a way for me to connect with cool people who I honestly wasn't meeting in that day-to-day scene on this deeper level and this fishing level. Because I knew they existed from when I had started to get into it earlier in life. But again, it started off as just like with no foundation. It wasn't like a brand or something we were trying to sell. And as it got a little bit bigger and we started meeting cooler people and had bigger and bigger goals and aspirations, we started doing a lot more exciting things, but also we're dreaming so big that you can kind of get that paralysis by analysis sort of thing going on.
Yeah.
So over the last like year or two with some of these relationships we've made, we've really tried to focus in on what are we good at as individuals and how can we deliver some value for somebody else that will let us continue to pursue our ultimate dreams, which is really that sort of Jeremy Wade lifestyle, doing it our way, but just that idea of if we want to go to Bhutan tomorrow and catch a golden messier, like what relationships can we call on and what can we do to help somebody else out in doing a trip like that? So that's been the biggest, maybe more business focus or mindset shift that we've had, is still have these bigger goals and aspirations, but really not skip steps in getting there. Because if someone were to give us funding to do, you know, like a 10-part series in Bhutan tomorrow, I don't think any of us would have any clue what to do with it. And so we're trying to really just make sure we learn a lot along the way and check off these bucket list items that are closer to home and learn what people see as valuable from what we do and how we can
That's super
give
the cool.
most back in doing that.
You know, when I started this podcast, I've done over like, how many been? Almost 900 episodes? 850 episodes. So when I started this one of the things that I was the most interested in was this moment where like people, you know, it started at first like fishing guides, charter captains, people that had gotten into the outdoors and almost always, I mean, there were a couple of like second and third generation guides and anglers and stuff like that on there, but almost always some of the best have come from another walk of life. And they came to this point in time where they decided, I'm doing that. And there have been some of the most interesting stories ever told on this were about that moment where you kind of decided, I'm not going to do this in Manhattan anymore. Like, I think that there is a future here. I'd like to hear it from all of you. Like, what were you doing before you started this? Because I hear, like, I talk to a lot of people, man, and a lot of people want to, it's like, I want to do an Instagram for fishing, or I want to start a YouTube channel, or it's like, okay, well, do it. Like, nothing's stopping you. But then most don't. But you guys have done it. So I'd love to hear, like, Johnny, you just said kind of what you were doing. What were you other guys doing before you started this, and are you all doing it full time now?
Well, from a personal standpoint, I've been fishing my whole life, and I've been filming my fishing adventures since 2010 when I was 13 years old. So I kind of rode that throughout high school, knowing that I enjoyed to film, but I also enjoyed it being coupled with the fishing aspect of things. Like, that's what was always most important to me, because the fishing came first. Fishing is what matters most to me. I've met all of my closest friends and associates through fishing, and it brings me physical and mental peace, you know, and stability. So it's always been super important to me. Over the years, I kind of molded that into a couple different work opportunities, one of which was being a part of Ike Live and working for Mike Iaconelli. Nice. So I did that for 3 years, and that was the main thing I was doing before Uncle Larry's really became a thing. Johnny actually started the page towards the end of my time there when he was working in Manhattan, and it just kind of really formulated through that, because I think we were both going through transitional periods in our lives where we looked at Uncle Larry's as like, hey, maybe we should focus on this, because at the end of the day, this is so pure and it just puts us around the kind of people that we want to be associated with, and we just always had a lot of appreciation for it. So when we were going through those transitional points in our lives, I think that's when Uncle Larry's really began to blossom for the two of us.
Was the first money that you ever made in fishing through Mike Iaconelli and Ike Live? Was that
no,
your first job?
Actually, before that, back in high school, I was associated with another website, which was basically just like a early kind of, you know, when forums were way more of a thing, the bass fishing forums. It was one of those, and that was when I got my first money to kind of go produce videos for this forum site. So
what was that forum site?
It was called the Bass College. Okay. It's not around today. It was really a thing back in the early 2010s.
Yeah, there were a lot of great forums that just got overrun with spam.
For sure. It was definitely a thing.
They couldn't keep it out of them.
Yeah, it for sure sparked my, just knowing that that was possible, you know? And then I would say a little later on, being around Mike was very important for me, because here's a guy that's literally like from the same state as me. I grew up watching and admiring this guy, but now I'm physically around him and able to see, okay, this man has actually built a successful life and career off of what I love to do in a different way than obviously we're trying to go about it right now. But just to be around someone like that and get that perspective was super important for me.
That's a great opportunity. What about you, Kai?
Yeah, so before ULO, I was I'd always fished. My dad got me into fishing when I was pretty young, and it was always more of a outlet for me. You know what I mean?
Where'd you grow up?
Jersey as well.
Jersey, okay.
Yeah, we're all from Jersey.
All from Trenton.
Yep. Born and raised, and yeah, it started off, you know, catfishing, carp fishing. That's how I got into it, and then as I got older, got into bass and the world of throwing artificials. And like I said, it was always kind of like a little getaway for me. And as I got older, I started to, I guess, gravitate more and more towards it. You know what I mean? More so when I got out of college and, you know, started to, you know, adult, you know.
What'd you study in college?
I originally went to college for law enforcement, and then I changed my major to video production.
Really?
And, you know, I thought I wanted to maybe, you know, work at like a newscasting place, like behind
it wasn't for fishing. You didn't change it because you thought you wanted to make fishing videos.
No, I honestly, I didn't even really think about trying to make fishing, you know, a career until.
So has that helped you, what you learned in college in video production?
For sure. It's kind of funny too, because, you know, I kind of, you know, when you're going to school, you kind of just dive into it and try to figure out something that you think you might like. I really had no idea, but I'm like, I've always had an interest in, you know, videography and photography. And if I could learn a little bit more about that, you know, maybe it'll spark more of a passion for it. And it did. I just didn't really have an outlet to use it. Huh. You know what I mean?
So when you got interested in fishing and you meet these guys, I guess, did you have a moment where you were like, dude, I already know how to do all this stuff.
So it's kind of funny. The way that I met, Johnny and Eric was actually, it was during the pandemic, just like the heat of the pandemic when everything was starting to shut down. I had gotten to, sales eventually after going to school for video production. Sales was always something that I did throughout college and whatnot. I was selling appliances. I worked at Best Buy for a little bit, H.H. Gregg. And then I got into the solar industry, and I was selling solar for a little bit. And then I started doing inspections, getting into people's attics, checking their roofs and their houses and whatnot. And one day, all my jobs had canceled because, you know, like I said, COVID was starting to heat up. Nobody wanted me coming in their house and whatnot. And I always used to keep a rod in my work van. And I was calling my manager. My manager's like, I don't know what's going on, man. I'm going to give you a call back, let you know what's happening. So I'm like, well, I guess I'm going to get paid to fish until, you know, I mean, I figured out what's going on.
So there's where your first dollar for fishing came on a different, on a solar job.
And I just went on Google Maps like I always used to do and found the nearest body of water to where I was in North Jersey, wherever I was that day. And I pull up to Speedwell Lake and I'm out there fishing, trying to catch a bass or something. It's like, what is it? February, March? It's like March. It's still a little colder out there, and this guy just walks up to me and starts, you know, talking to me or whatnot about fishing, asks me what I'm looking for or whatnot. He's like, yeah, bro, there's no bass in here. You know, find another place to go, but we start chopping it up and whatnot. And he's like, you should follow my son's fishing page
on Instagram, YouTube. He makes like fishing videos. I think you guys would, you know, get along or not. At first, I'm like, all right, this guy's trying to get me to follow his 13-year-old son's fishing page or something like that. You know what I mean? And then I go and I look it up later that night. And I was actually watching one of Eric's videos. He caught a state record pickerel, unofficial state record pickerel out of a body of water in North Jersey. And I was just literally watching that video the week before. So I'm like, well, this is probably a sign of some sort. So I should probably, you know, see what these guys are about. And, you know, fast forward our first send, I think I drove up to Long Island where Johnny was at to go fish with these guys out in Long Island for fluke and stripers and stuff off the beach. And it's kind of written in stone from there.
Man, you know? That's cool. What in the world was your dad doing at that lake?
That's a lake that Johnny's been there with me many times. We literally grew up fishing that lake. It's minutes away from where we grew up. And the cool thing about it is in the middle of the winter, when a lot of other stuff freezes over, it's actually a dammed up river system. So there's a little bit of current flowing through it. Doesn't always freeze. And there's a lot of big chain pickerel in there, fish that will bite in really cold conditions. Huh. So that's why my dad's seen him trying to catch bass, and he had to come up and just help my man out.
You didn't catch any pickerel?
No bass in there.
Well, wouldn't a pickerel bite a bass lure? Seems like a pike would. I don't know anything about pickerel. I've fished for pike a bunch, but
oh yeah,
oh
yeah.
They definitely, oh, yeah, yeah, they oh, love yeah. Jerk baits specifically. Yeah. Oh, okay. Cold weather, they love jerk baits.
That's
yeah.
cool.
But, I think that's what I was throwing too.
It's funny though. That day, I think he was just there with his girlfriend going on a walk, and it's crazy because I don't know my dad to necessarily be someone to go out of the way to always have conversations like that, especially when he's with his girl, but. I think it was just a divine intervention moment when, you know, if that was something bigger than him channeled through him to be like, hey, I should go up to that guy. And I should talk to
that's
him.
That's super cool.
I believe in that stuff. So
that's how you guys got together. And then what about how you two end up with Johnny?
Well, I've known Johnny since we were 6 years old. We grew up together and in a fairly large school system in New Jersey, he was one of my two good fishing friends. I knew two people that fished. It was Johnny and our other mutual friend, Jack, and that was it. So it was kind of, I mean, the fact that we both liked to fish and we knew each other from that early age, that aspect of it was kind of set in stone. And then a little bit later on in college when, you know, I was working for Mike and Johnny was in Manhattan, we never lost that connection through fishing. Johnny would literally get on the train, meet me at a train station in Jersey. I'd pick him up. We'd drive 2 hours north into upstate New York, fish all day in 20-degree weather. And next thing you know, Johnny is walking back down a Manhattan street at 1 a.m, soaked with waders on with a rod in downtown Manhattan.
Nobody bothers you when you look like
that. We always have
that,
you know.
Nobody bothers you when you're soaking wet and waders walking down the street in Manhattan.
You're just
like whatever you're up to, man. I don't even want to know.
Like, that's the one nice thing about Manhattan. You're hidden in plain sight. Like, that would be crazy in almost any other city, but there it's, hey, you're not wielding a weapon or something. Right. So I'm gonna just let it go.
They probably think you've been down in the sewer. They're like, just stay away from that guy. Like,
yeah,
sewer rats.
Yeah. So Mike Iaconelli, I always loved his show about like the urban bass fishing
city
and
limits,
stuff like that. City Limits. Yeah, it was on. We were on the same network, I think. I think he was on NBC Sports or maybe it was Versus back in the day. But he was on there. Did you ever go city fishing with Mike Iaconelli when you worked for him?
Yeah, actually, we got on the news because we went into downtown Philadelphia and caught a catfish through a storm drain in the middle of the city. And
nice.
The news channel showed up and all of that. But yeah, we grew up watching City Limits for sure. It was a major influence on our childhood, especially considering that, you know, Ike really stood for, hey, you don't need to be from Georgia. Khaki pants, plaid shirt, you could be a little loud, you could have tattoos, you could be from Philly, and you could be a part of this. And when we were young, that was really important for us to see that. So to develop a friendship with him later on and, you know, go on some of the adventures we have, it's been nothing short of
that's awesome. And not only that, I mean, the way that he did it, like with the going through the Federation and then winning the Bassmaster Classic, like it couldn't be, like just the story that you told is enough, right? Like that would be enough to have kind of an iconic status. Like you got tattoos and you're from Jersey and you're kind of loud and you're not the same as certainly when he broke onto the scene, he was a different character, right? And then, but it's just that he did it, and he's such a hero to so many people because of the way that he did it and going through the Federation, and there's that one spot, and you get that spot, and that would be a great story. Like, just that you made it to the Bassmaster Classic through the Federation, but then to win?
Yeah.
And then to go on and prove that that wasn't a fluke, that you can compete and you can win and you can be one of the top guys from then on. Like, I don't know. It's great. He's been on the podcast twice. And the first time that I had him on, we met at ICAST. And he was the nicest guy. And I just walked up to him. I was like, hey, Mike, I'm Tom Rowland. I was wondering if you wanted to be on the podcast. He goes, yeah, man, I'm a big fan of the podcast. When do you want to do it? I was like, what? You've listened to my podcast? He's like, yeah, of course I've listened to your podcast. Of course I know who you are. Like, he was just so nice. He came right up to the suite and sat down there, and he told his whole story in a way that it seemed like he had never told it before. I mean, he was emotional about it. He was just great, man. I just have a tremendous amount of respect for him. He's just a really, really cool guy. And yeah, the work he's done with the foundations and stuff is just, I mean, he's an inspiration to me of like you guys are like, you know, you want to do this all pure, and we're going to go into what you want to get out of Uncle Larry Outdoors. But like what Mike Iaconelli has accomplished, like that speaks to me. Like he has this whole foundation and he's helping so many kids get into the sport. So I hope you, and it sounds like you definitely do know what a great opportunity that was to get to know him and the way he does things. That's super cool. So, what do you want to tell me about where Uncle Larry Outdoors is now? Like what's your main platform, YouTube or Instagram or what?
Well, I would say if you want to go purely off numbers, our biggest following is on Instagram, and Instagram has been a good platform for us because we have a nice mix of putting up raw content on there that people can just scroll and enjoy. But then there's also a deeper, more artistic side to Uncle Larry's, I would say, which really aims to portray fishing in the light which we all see it, which is like a super deep and meaningful thing. And Instagram has allowed us to produce stuff like that and it get out there. So I'd say that, and then YouTube for our longer form stuff, your 20, your 30 minute videos of entire days of fishing. So those are our two main ones right now. Yeah. But we're also on TikTok as well.
Does that do well for you? Are you guys TikTokers?
We're kind of like that millennial cuts where we don't understand it, so it's not easy. But
so how old are you guys?
27.
You're 28. You're all 27, 28. So yeah, you kind of missed it a little bit.
Yeah,
I got three kids. My oldest son is 26, so right around you guys' age. He missed it totally. Like, but then my middle son, then my daughter. My middle son's 25, and then my daughter is 20, and so she's squarely in the TikTok. But it's funny how just a few years have you missing something. Like, you guys are probably not Facebook people at all. Like, no. But I bet you remember. Like, I mean, I remember when my son came back, my oldest son, and he's like, Dad, I got to have a Facebook page. And that lasted a little while. Like, okay, I guess you can have a Facebook page, you know, I guess, but we're going to talk about like what this is. Like, what are you going to do with it? But then you're squarely in the Instagram world. Like that's that age, I think, of past, not quite Facebook, definitely YouTube, Instagram. Like, it's funny how they all go on these waves. And like, I know for our Instagram, I got on Instagram real early and we got a lot of followers right away. And if you try to get on now, it's tough, right? Mm-hmm. What do you think that you missed the TikTok wave or maybe it's just not important?
Well, we had that one video go super viral and like millions of people on TikTok were reposting it and we weren't even on TikTok. Like, we technically had a handle, but we didn't ever use it. So I think our lesson learned from that is like, we make a lot of content, and so we might as well throw darts at the board on TikTok. And like on Instagram, like, we have our consistency in how we kind of portray the page.
Yeah.
And we know what we're going to do with like hashtags and how we're going to respond to followers and everything. Cause we were kind of bred into that. Like TikTok, for us to spend the time to figure that out, we'll do it over time and organically and try and get a bit of a return on it. But right now we just post our content on there. Hope we get some crossover and some bleeding over from people who are familiar with us from YouTube or Instagram. And
right.
People are making their way to it, but it's not something we put as much time or effort in.
So have you guys figured out how to do this full time?
I would say no. We definitely do our best to like bring in as much as we can to and put it all back into fishing mm-hmm. through Uncle Larry's. Like there's still a lot of work to do on the side to make sure that you just kind of have the needs met. Mm-hmm. And that's been a struggle at times because we have such a fire about fishing.
Like your needs that, met, like your rent paid and your,
yeah,
and
all
your bills.
Yes. Like okay. We've been through it all with, mm-hmm. with that stuff. But yeah, I mean, we've taken on all sorts of jobs, whether it's corporate 9-to-5s while we're doing this or side hustles, selling the work we do for ourselves and fishing as a service to other small businesses, other platforms, other fishing brands, other fishing people. We're definitely trying to tap into a more like gig economy type mindset because we do put all of this effort on the social media side that people do find valuable, like whether it's in real estate, promoting a house that's for sale, or a new small business or a restaurant, something along those lines. It's all the same formula in terms of what you have to do to prep technology wise with cameras, uploading things, giving advice on how to post it. It's pretty much just multimedia marketing is what we've realized, like we've organically taught ourselves in trying to build a fishing brand. So there's definitely an element to trying to sustain and elevate ourselves on that front outside of the fishing world, because as I'm sure a lot of people know, like the fishing world, it can be a tough place to crack into on the financial side, because it is such a pure activity. It's something that so many people are willing to go out and do and produce content at a huge discount or for free. So you really do have to prove yourself over a long period of time, and you have to be unique enough where somebody finds a value that they're willing to pay for it. And honestly, if you can do that in fishing, you can probably make more money doing that elsewhere until you get to a certain point. So getting creative with that skill set and trying to sell ourselves and using fishing as a portfolio has definitely been a good intermediary step for us. But I mean, the goal is, you know, to put 100% of our focus and our money and time and attention on fishing. So we're never looking to get away from that
well,
either.
It actually sounded like there was a couple of things there. Like you want to like make a multimedia marketing firm that provides enough money so that you can fish all the time. Right. Mm-hmm. Or do you make your money from fishing? Like, I'm sure that you guys sit around and talk about this all the time. Because I mean, like if you were to kind of blue sky, you know, a 3 or 5 year plan from now, like what would it look like for Uncle Larry?
I think one thing we've talked about the most for like a blue sky idea is having like a consistent project-based portfolio where somebody knows, like if we pitch a project, however crazy it is, somebody knows that it's going to get to the audience that they're looking to capture from that financial side of why would I invest in this project? What are they using or doing that is going to get to this market? And have they shown over years that they have an audience? And so we've been very, very stringent on fishing with as many people that follow us as possible, always communicating with them, responding, helping out however we can with that community, because that's our foundation. That's why we do it in the first place, is it started as kind of a networking opportunity to meet cool people. And now these cool people are really behind us. But in terms of like the project type world, we definitely have lofty goals. And I think for us, it's kind of that we grew up with Pokemon. Well, Kai and I have talked about this a lot, this idea of catching them all and having that sort of unaccomplishable goal in life and getting as close to it as you can. I think really just the idea of being able to pick a species and a destination and go and come back with like with a picture that you went out and did that, setting a goal. It's a metaphorical thing of setting a goal and accomplishing it. So I think the blue sky idea for us is really to get to a point where we have the skill set to go anywhere in the world and catch whatever fish it is. We have the audience to support that and get excited behind it. So we need to have a positive message behind what we're doing to encapsulate something bigger than fishing. And then is that audience consistent enough and targeted enough where a brand that we're behind too, that helps us out, can get value from having that viewership.
Man, I think you found your idea just a minute ago when you were talking about Pokemon, and you create an app. Like, you create an app where people are basically, it's like a scavenger hunt, but you got to catch a fish there.
We've talked about this.
You should do it, man. You should do it. You should totally do it. I mean, you could probably put together an app that wouldn't minimal viable product. You could probably put it together that wouldn't cost you an arm and a leg. And I mean, you guys probably figure out how to build an app like that. And then you just test it with your audience and just see if it works, like if people are into it. Or you just have like, you could just do, like, I'm way into like, you know, minimum viable product or just something that you can test an idea with. Like, you got this audience. You could do like a scavenger hunt just on a weekend and just see how many people participated and just run it like right on Instagram or something. You got to tag this and you just look at all the pictures and then you get an idea of like, would people do this? And then maybe you put some cash up or some prizes or something. Seems like a good way. That's one of the things I wanted to talk to you guys about, because that seems like an idea that would resonate with people your age and younger, right? Like the scavenger hunt, or like a dad with his kids or something. Like, maybe that's a way to get people in. With my kids, we used to do these fishing tournaments where you could look at all the things that were caught, and then you could find open categories, or you could be like, well, we could easily catch bigger fish than this. And so we'd have a whole list of things that we would go out, and it was kind of like a scavenger hunt. We need four ladyfish, and they got to be, you know, we got to catch them on this pound test, and you know, they're learning how to do all the knots and they're learning how to catch the fish, and you know, and then we need one horse-eyed jack, and we need, you know, these fish are not like hard to catch, you know, but it was more about like fish identification, learning about like where these fish are and what they do, what they eat. Like, they learned so much like that, more than they learned in school. They didn't even realize that they were doing it, but they were interested in fishing. So, but it was kind of like our little scavenger hunt. But I think that idea would be kind of cool. And one of the things that I had on the schedule to talk to you guys about was, like, you know, in the fishing industry, getting youth into fishing, or maintaining the interest is a definite concern because of phones, video games, you name it. There's a lot of distractions and a lot of things that are pulling kids. Like, when I grew up, we were just outside all the time. I mean, you get on your bicycle and you didn't have to come home till after dark. And there was usually a fishing rod on there and you riding around. It sounds like you guys did a lot of the same kind of stuff, but that's not the case with most kids these days. And you also have like this whole kind of urban fishing kind of background that I don't necessarily have, but that's interesting. So what I was going to ask you about before we even got on the app and those kind of things was just like, how do you see that it's most effective to talk to younger people, like your age or younger, like teenagers especially, talk to them about fishing, encourage them to go fishing? Like, what's missing in the fishing industry that you guys are obviously tapping into that other people should be tapping into?
I think from the start, it goes back to seeing the enthusiasm that we have on camera when we're out there. That reel that went viral with Kai catching that bass, I always think back to, why did that go viral? Why did that resonate with so many people? And it was nothing about a gimmick, nothing about anything, but the fact that you could feel that energy through the screen and you could realize, like, wow, whatever he's doing there, I want to do that. Whether it's in fishing or it's outside of fishing, I want to feel how he felt when he caught that fish. So I think giving kids that opportunity to feel that sort of feeling, for example, when the page was smaller and we were still up in New York City, we did this event. And the, like I said, mind you, the page was very small. We were able to raise a good amount of money to get rods and reels, and we literally brought them into the middle of Central Park and just started handing them out to kids, being like, hey, who wants to go fishing? And we had corn and we caught bluegills, and I was able to actually sit there and watch that kid for the first time feel that bite and pull that rod up and see a bluegill on the other end. And in that moment, I knew that kid got that feeling. And that's something that it's not even something that you could physically see. You just know, right? And it's like, that kid might be hooked for life. Mm-hmm. I think making sure that they actually can tangibly feel what it's like to experience something like that is where it starts, I would say.
You know what's interesting about that is that kid might be hooked for life and might turn into someone that fishes often. Or they might fish once every 5 years, but they'll be a fisherman at heart for the rest of their life. And that is super, super important because, you know, there's a lot of people that don't think fishing's cool. Like, believe it or not, they're out there. and the more people that we have as allies of, what are you talking about? Fishing's amazing. It was some of the best time I ever spent with my dad, or some of the best time I ever spent with my mom, or, you know, I had a great time every time I went, except for the one time I got hooked in the finger. You know, like you can put an impression on someone that makes them a fisherman for life, and that they have respect and well, it's really like respect for the whole sport and the people that do it, ethically and right. Right. So what about Johnny and Kai? You got anything to add to that?
Yeah, just real quick on what you were saying about, you know, like people not finding fishing cool and kind of tying it back into the youth, and then also where the industry might be missing right now. Well, the one thing I've noticed, I think we've all collectively noticed since COVID, is when we were growing up, especially in New Jersey, fishing was not cool. That's why we were the only ones doing it. Now I go back to my hometown and I see like 8 or 10 kids out on bikes fishing. I see kids with multiple, they got their personal Instagram page. Fishing's all of a sudden getting cool. Mm-hmm. And I've heard somebody compare it to like skateboard culture almost in the 90s, because it's taken on from like this country club bass boat or tuna boat lifestyle to like, let's get back to the adventure being the part of it. It doesn't really matter. The fish is kind of secondary. And I think with the pandemic and people being cooped up so much, it was like, I'm going to set a small goal and catch a fish today. And catching the fish is the proof that you went out and had a great day. But you remember the day itself and just how much you're laughing and exploring new places. And the urban environment's really cool for that too, because you realize life finds a way in Central Park. So if you're like, well, if I can do that here, and then you go and look at a map of the world, and now kids have Google Maps, you're like, well, I can do that here or there or there. And this place is driving distance. I had no idea this was here. So I think there is an element where it's becoming cool and you're seeing a lot more kids getting into it. And honestly, like, say what you want about these guys, like, we haven't always done the same thing as them, but like, when people took that YouTube perspective, like a Guggen Squad type mentality, and showcased that coffee to bedtime adventure, people empathize with that. Where I think the industry is missing is you're trying to sell people who've never tried the sport 20 different setups that are $1,000 each, with you can't use 10-pound test mono, you have to use 8-pound fluoro to catch us. It's bullshit. And like, when you get to a certain level, like when you're on the PGA Tour, you're using irons with a sweet spot this big, because you're hitting, like, those irons are made for that level. And yes, like, equipment matters when you get to that level. But you're trying to sell to a generation that's just getting started, and you're telling them they need thousands of dollars, that they need electronics on the front of the boat. No, they need to go out and have fun. They need to go hop a fence when they're 12 years old and catch a 6-pounder and giggle running away from a tractor. Like, those memories are going to drive you to be the person in 15 years who, yes, has that $5,000 Goliath setup and move down to the Keys. Like, if you want someone to get there, the barrier to entry can't be so significant, and it can't be shamed for people who are doing more with less. Like, that's been a big thing for us, is do more with what you have and don't make it so much about the result as the people you meet, the places you see, the experiences you have, and the lessons you learn. Because if you do all of those things, the fishing will come. You're going to learn how to use that gear. That gear is going to find its way into your hands. But don't skip steps. Those are the things you remember the most. Is like, we're fortunate enough now, if we want to go to the Keys, we know six people there we can go hang out with. But when we first got to Florida, we were sleeping literally on the streets of Miami to get 2 hours in sleeping bags in a dirt lot just so we could try and catch a tarpon. And at the end of the day, those are the days that we'll remember.
Yeah.
And so I just think keeping it cool is also in part, like, it's fine to sell a product. It's fine to sell an experience, but make sure it's something that is actually useful, is not going to discourage somebody from wanting to be a part of what is ultimately a community that really has nothing to do with gear.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good advice, I think. I think it's really good advice. I think that, you know, just like you're talking about, don't skip steps for the angler, for the person that's getting into it. It's also probably the same could be said for the whole fishing industry. Don't skip steps and just assume. I think that that's one of the things that, you know, me, I've been in the fishing industry now for, I don't know, 30 plus years, and it's very easy to just start here where you think that means the very basics, but you're missing like the years before where literally you had no idea. Like, it's like we're focusing in on the nuances of these knots, which is great for a certain part of the audience, right? Then there's this whole other part that's just like, wait, there's more than one knot? Like, why would you even need that, right?
Yes.
Like, so, yeah. I mean, I think that it's, I need to be constantly reminded of my, on my own, like in the way that you phrase questions on the podcast or the way that you're doing YouTube videos or even talking to people on the show is like, yeah, a lot of the stuff that we're fishing for is like this once in a lifetime fish, a permit or a tarpon or a sailfish or something like that. That is definitely a once in a lifetime fish for a lot of people. And in order to do that, it takes a certain kind of gear, but there's zillions of other fish that you could catch, you know, just like what you were saying is like pull up to any bridge. You can catch snappers and grunts and Jack Crevels and all kinds of stuff that will pull harder than any freshwater fish. And it's so fun, right? And it's so easy, but a lot of that gets you, people forget to talk about like that. And it's interesting on YouTube, like the things that get the most views are the most interesting fish. They're never the biggest fish or the, well, maybe like a Goliath, but that's an interesting fish too. It like looked like a dinosaur, right? But that's how we used to do it with my kids. Is it was never, when I would take my kids fishing, it was never about like the biggest fish. Or I'd take them bone fishing and they'd be like, this sucks. I mean, we haven't caught three today. And we're like, I'm like, three's good. Like we're doing great. They're like, this is terrible. Like when we went over to that bush, we caught hundreds, and they're talking about little snappers like this, right? Like they were cool and they were biting at everything. And that's what they remember. Or you catch like an eel, or you catch anything weird, a puffer fish. They'll remember that for the rest of the day. So we used to take pictures of who caught the coolest fish or the weirdest fish. And that would be what would go on the refrigerator, like back when you got pictures developed and stuff. But they were so much more interested in that, the weirdest fish or the coolest fish or the rarest fish, but never about like, oh, we caught another tarpon and it was 1 inch bigger than the last one we caught. And like most people, especially kids, are like, I don't know. They all look the same to me. Like, can we go catch the barracudas? They have huge teeth and they're so cool. But yeah, I like that. So cool. So, Uncle Larry, with the, I mean, we talked about your plan for the future. Do you other guys believe, that's the way to go? Or do you think you should be doubled down on fishing? And that you'll find is it the path of a multimedia marketing agency so that you make enough money to fish all the time? Or is it, let's figure out how to do this in fishing? Like are you all aligned on that?
I believe so. Yeah. I think we definitely have to find, for the time being, at least some other ways to maintain you know. And I think the goal ultimately, like Johnny said, is to work up to be able to have the, you know, financial backing to be able to just go to, you know, whatever place we want to go to and do that. And, you know, in the near future, have that knowledge and the skill set and the capabilities to do that the way it needs to be done properly. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, that's a real challenging thing, I think, when you're starting, you know, to get into that business of like, how does that pay? Right? Like,
yeah.
And I think a lot of people, I think most people miss and a few people hit it, but like, I don't know where, like, where are you leaning on how that pays? Like who would pay for a, and I'm just asking like a rhetorical question here, like who would pay for a project to send you to Bhutan, for example?
I think that's what we're working on finding
yeah.
out.
Yeah. Testing the
water. That's the real challenge right there.
Yeah, that's like, the real challenge.
How do you create a product that someone wants to pay for?
Exactly. And like we've started this and everything's been our own, you know, time and money. And then luckily lately, like we do project work for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times, this is probably more the answer to your question, like the direction it's taken from that side is our own stuff is our own stuff. Like there's really like not as much of a reason for somebody to pay for us to come out with stuff that's mostly benefiting us. There are, you know, ways you can soft market things. If there's like particular gear and baits you really believe in and you develop a good relationship with that person and it's getting in front of millions of eyes every month, like that is worth something. If there's a brand consistency, but overall, I think a big thing too is taking those multimedia skills that we put into our own content and creating content for other brands in the industry. So it's not necessarily like an Uncle Larry's video, mm-hmm. but we're already out filming one. So how do we take the resources we have and the time we're spending on the water and produce something of value for you, which send us rods, send us reels, send us baits, and we'll film your ads. If we don't believe in what it is necessarily, we're not going to associate it with us or the brand, but we will do that corporate side of the work.
Mm-hmm.
If we do believe in it, even better, because now you're going to get that natural product integration with the videos because we're going to have that gear on hand for weeks, months, years to come. But showcasing that we can come out with professional looking content rather than that sort of bloggish style content and be consistent on when we promise we're going to deliver something. That's been a big thing we've realized in the fishing industry, and not to ramble on about this sort of thing, but again, we talked before, people like to do this stuff and they're willing to do it for free. So if a brand sends you rods and says, give us some videos, you might get one or two back and then the excitement fades a little bit. So you're paying for is a consistency. So if somebody sends us rods, says, I need ads for these rods done by the end of the month, we're going to be very upfront and honest about what those are going to look like, when we're going to deliver them. And a lot of people in the industry for years have thought we're like goony, ridiculous, going to get into some trouble Jersey guys. And there is an element of truth to that. But when we say we're going to do something for you that you're giving us a return for, we take that really seriously. And I think people starting to recognize that with us, which is great. And we're building up those relationships over time. And it just takes time. And people see value in different things. Some yeah. people want soft integration, big fish mm-hmm. on their rods. Some people want a really corporate media ad, and that's never going to go on our Instagram page, but we'll make the ads for you mm-hmm. and you can use them however you want. So there is work that's maybe not directly tied with our logo, but mm-hmm. still involves Shimano is going to need, you know, for their next line of reels, they need pictures, they need videos, they got iCasts,
mm-hmm.
they got magazines. Yeah. You still need these things. And the more one company decides to step up and invest in marketing their product, the more everyone else has to play keep up. So there is opportunity. You just got to be creative and develop the right relationships and be consistent.
Yeah, very good. Tell me about the positive message that you mentioned that a couple of times, the positive message that's underlying in everything that you're doing.
Well, I think it all just really goes back to, like I was saying, with the feeling. It's like it means so much to all of us individually to be out there fishing and experiencing these things that, as someone that does a lot of the video work for Uncle Larry's, my goal with it and what I really want people to get out of it is just to watch one of these edits and feel that, get inspired to go experience that themselves, whether it's inside or outside of fishing. And just like I said, when they, for example, the last video that I just put up the other day with Kai and I catching redfish, you hear the laugh that I have when I hook up to one of those nice redfish. I sound like a five-year-old child. And I want you to see that. I want you to feel it. And I want you to go chase that yourself. Whatever that is, like I said, inside or outside of fishing, I just want you to chase it, you know? And I think this life is such a beautiful gift. And, you know, we really owe it to God for putting us here to make the most of it, you know? And I just want people to feel that.
That's cool. What about you, Kai?
Yeah, I definitely resonate with that. I think the biggest takeaway that I want people to get is just to kind of find their passion. One of the things that really stuck with me about all the comments that I was seeing on that viral video was like people asking themselves, like, damn, I don't even know what makes me this happy. Like, I need to find, you know, something that makes me want to scream like that. You know what I mean? Just having people ask themselves that question, like, what is my passion? What is my purpose? Why am I here? What do I really love to do? And how can I do that in a fulfilling manner? You know what I mean? I think that would be the overall message that I'd like people to take, is to just, you know what I mean, do what fulfills you, do what you're passionate about, and do it to the fullest.
I love it. We couldn't end it any better than that, right about an hour almost exactly, and end it with a positive message. I love that. I love that this whole conversation. It was really fantastic because it was very reminiscent of the early podcast that I did, and that was really the underlying message of, like, why did you make this change in your life, you know, to move into basically to fish. And you know, there's a lot of other people that have had a similar draw to the fishing world. You know, it's their passion. It's what gets them excited. It's what's awesome and fun. And they quit a job just like you guys did, or moved to a different part of the country so that they could do this. So I love what you're doing. I think it's really great. And wish you the best of luck, man. How do people follow?
Uncle Larry Outdoors on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. And if there's any other ones that we need to hop into, we'll get on that. But
yeah, somebody send us a comment. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. All right, man. Well, I'm sure that you'll pick up some new followers on, you know, from this, and, you got at least one. I'm following you guys now. So I like what you're doing, and, it's really cool. Really cool. All right. It was awesome to meet you guys. We'll be back next week with another great guest, just like these guys from Uncle Larry's. And that's it. We'll see you next week. See ya.